anyhow, one of the greatest things that, and I believe Bob Richards said it, I'm not sure if it was on the Rhythm DVD or if it was on a President's Club call, and I'm checking my notes right quick. You think I would be organized here? No, actually, he said it on the DVD 3 weeks ago. We got to see the latest from corporate headquarters, and Bob Richards, our president, made the comment. He said, you know, what separates the Meekins from the rest of the pack as far as the network marketing industry are three things, and it's the wellness home, the business opportunity, and the five pillars of health. And this morning we're going to talk about that third component. Why would he say the five pillars of health? No. Because a lot of people say, well, it's kind of more like just a philosophy or a list of suggestions that you kind of live by to get in balance so, you know, you don't get too much in pursuit of the almighty dollar. What tends to separate Meekin Wellness Consultants, now I can't say speak for all of them, the majority of them, what tends to separate them is the fact that we live by this concept of a healthy mind, body, family, finances, and society. And I want to explore down the path of what it means to live and to really contribute to a society, not so much in our own backyard, but internationally, what that means to contribute to a healthy society in making a difference and making a change. And I've asked two young gals to join me, one of which is a little bit closer to me than the other for obvious reasons. That's McKenna Rogers, our 8-year-old daughter, or 8 and a half now, because I'm always getting corrected. And the other one is Jessie Riederveld, who has been a friend of ours for years. We actually met her a couple weeks before we took a trip to India when we were working with the Jesus Film Project, and also did a polar bear project as a result, and did some seed distribution while we were there, which was an incredible opportunity. But these two young gals, not even a week ago, returned home from an incredible 12-day trip to Indonesia and the Philippines. And one of the aspects of what they were doing there was fulfilling that role, if you so to speak, of, hey, what can we do to contribute to people that are not so much just less fortunate, but utilizing our lives and our networking abilities to give to other people? So I'm going to drag the youngest first here and get a few comments, and she's wrapped up in a blanket. Not really keen on helping Daddy out on a call at 7 a.m. in the morning, and aggressively following the path of Ruth Williams and playing, actually it's Hearts on the computer, not Solitaire. So sorry, Ruth, she's not quite up to your standards yet. That's just a little tidbit of information that most of you don't know, that Ruth spends the majority of her time while on conference calls playing Solitaire. So anyway, the secret's out. Jess is with us, and Jess, I never did divulge your age because you're never supposed to do that to adult women. But do you want to go ahead for the record and let folks know how old you are? Well, I know she's on here. Well, maybe she'll join us in a couple minutes. So, let's start with McKenna. So, oh, man. Yeah, okay, you're going to have to sit up for me here. And, Ken, tell the folks on the call, first of all, what started this whole idea of you going overseas? I mean, you're only 8 years old, and I know that you bugged your parents for quite a while about traveling, and that's probably chalked up to Grandma's influence of her working for the airlines years ago. So we got that travel bug. You've been on, 12, 13 cruises. Your younger sister, who's 5 and a half, has been on over 100 plane rides. So travel is not an issue for you. 102 plane rides. Why Indonesia? What? How did this come about? Why on earth would you think that a young girl of 8 years old could travel so far and be a part of something like this? I mean, you why? What? How did it all come about?
Well, I asked my mom a lot over the years, and now I finally get to go, and I think they do believe that. I'm really, really glad.
So the part of the trip you didn't know about, the whole Philippines, going to that country, because that was kind of kept a secret for a while. But again, Ken, why why did you want to do this? I mean, you knew about what happened a year and a half ago with the tsunami, and so many people were killed, 125,000 people, and a lot of those people, their kids lived on, and so they were placed in orphanages, and just because you felt like this was something to do because you want to give this to kids that were less fortunate, or was there something else involved? You're nodding your head, but I mean, the first part, kids that were less fortunate, yeah, just because you can't, you're one of those type of people that sees something on the news and just can't step back and be idle, right? Yeah, big smile on that one. So, Jess, I think I heard you click in there.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. So, Jess, McKenna wants you to say how old you are for the record. Oh, I wanted to too.
I'm 21, and I was on earlier. My phone wasn't working.
Okay. Now, Jess, let's back up a little bit, because you were in India. We were on a trip to India, and that was in August of 2001, and
mm-hmm.
you got to be a part of, you know, what we in Nikan terms call a polar bear project, which was we raised money at a Nikan product launch, over $1,500 worth, actually, and purchased seeds for a group of individuals who, unbeknownst to us, their crops that previously, just a couple months prior to us getting there, had all been washed out by a monsoon. And so we got, what was there, 100 or so people, a couple
yeah.
of pastors that we distributed seeds to along with the Jesus film when we did that. And now you grew up going overseas on missions with your parents to Mexico and everything, so you had that travel bug early on too. But as a young girl, so we're going back 6 years ago, when you were in India, so just even as a teenager, why?
I think it was, you know, the itch to see what life was like in other places and see how that applied to my life and what I could learn from that.
Okay, and what, I mean, but come on, let's go back to India. You're a teenager, you're 15, 16 years old.
Right.
Kind of concern. And I mean, because I know that was the concern we got with McKenna. She wasn't even three yet. And people
right.
said, is that safe? You know, and my question was, well, do you think there's 2.5, 3-year-olds in India? I mean, out of a billion people population. And I know you were quite the spectacle, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, you know, being in India where that just doesn't exist. Let's fast forward now to Indonesia.
Right.
You found out about the trip, what was it, a month, 6 weeks before?
Yeah, about 6 weeks.
And didn't have your passport or didn't have an update on any passport, so you can't hear everything together. Let me go back to when the tsunami hit. And
right.
you were actually, I think you were living in Africa at the time.
I was in Liberia.
Okay, working with Mercy Ships. And,
correct.
So when news of that hit you all the way over there in the middle of Africa, what did that do for you?
You know, it was kind of real because it was very different. We were listening to news, you know, by radio powered by batteries and not watching it on CNN or, you know, at home on the couch. And it was like, wow, I'm in a third world place that, you know, could have been affected by this just as this other place was, and just to know what the resources were to help with the relief and all that sort of stuff was, it had a greater impact just because of where I was, I think.
Okay. So let's talk about the aspect of, can we really make a difference? You know, you came back from Africa. You went right to work for Nordstrom's at their, of all places, their makeup counter. What do you call it? The there's another term for it.
Cosmetics.
Cosmetics counter. And which is the extreme opposite end. Here you go from living in a third world country to helping people, you know, paint the barn if the barn needs painting. So one extreme to the other. But how can we, literally, as Americans, North Americans, contribute to other people? Let's say we're not going to jump on a plane and fly halfway around the globe. I mean, literally to the other time
Right.
15-hour time difference in Indonesia and the Philippines. I want to talk about first being in Indonesia and seeing what you guys saw, because I know you had quite a few incredible experiences judging by the pictures that came back. And I want to talk, let me ask Ken first. Ken, what was the orphanage like for you?
It was like, it's hard to explain, but I liked it there a lot. I loved it. It was fun to pass out all the stickers and give the check to the main person and want to go back.
Okay, now you said pass out stickers, so let's talk about that first. You and your classmates at school back here in Oregon, you collected stickers for a couple weeks, and you gave those out to there was 200 kids at this orphanage where you guys visited, and some of these were actually kids who lost their parents a year and a half ago who don't have a chance at all, and then a lot of them are kids that are dropped off by their parents because their parents just cannot take care of them. And there were 200 kids at this orphanage, and I know Grandma and Grandpa collected a lot of shoes, and then you and your classmates collected stickers. And you had made the comment to me. Owen, soaps. Yeah, toiletry soaps from hotels. We've been collecting those for quite a while. But you had made the comment about the stickers. Can you elaborate on that? That something about you didn't know what that would really mean to a kid. So let's talk about that for a sec. When it came to the stickers, you'd specifically said something because you've never been enthralled by 200 kids surrounding you and Zach and Naylan all at the same time. Oh, it was just Naylan. Zach didn't help pack out the stickers. Okay, he played the whole time. Tag. So what did that do for you? Seeing how excited the kids got when you handed them the stickers.
Oh, really, really happy. It was cool. The whole. I don't know, it was really happy to see everything, I guess.
I think the comment when you looked at me and said, you know, Daddy, I never knew that a sticker could mean so much. Yeah, that comment. That was the one I was digging for. So, let's go on. And then, Jess, you were there. You got to see it from a different perspective.
Right.
Because you're taller, obviously. You've been to orphanages before.
Right.
What? Was this one different?
This one, the orphanage experience, you kind of have to prepare yourself ahead of time and get geared up to be like, okay, you cannot take the children home with you. You cannot lose it and, you know, make a scene because that's just not appropriate.
And I think you did lose it with one little girl. Talk about that.
Oh, she was adorable. She was 8 years old, and she has Down syndrome, and it was pretty evident. And my younger brother, who's 15, has Down syndrome, so it was just kind of hit home. And the main overtaker of the facility of the orphanage there, he, Pot Nathaniel, he was just holding her, and she was attached to him like he was her own daughter, or she was his own daughter. And just to see that kind of connection and that kind of care in an orphanage where there are 200 children, and knowing that she has special needs, and a lot of times those kids fall by the wayside, and it just really touched my heart, and I couldn't control the water flow.
It's pretty, looked like your eyes were sweating quite a bit.
They were.
Judging by the photos of that experience, something that hit quite close to home on that. Seeing that environment, the pictures, it looks like a very clean facility.
Oh, it's amazing. It was more like what I would think of a group home would be like in the States, but with more of a family atmosphere. Like there were about 10 to 15 ladies that come every day and just play with the kids and mother them and give them the, you know, the kind of the scolding when they need it and the hugs and the kisses, and that's not something that I've seen at orphanages leaving the kids there. I felt like they were in a good place.
Okay. And you didn't have to take the back seat to an 8-year-old girl, you know, this Caucasian one, not referring to the one that you were holding. You got to experience it firsthand. I mean,
right.
Yeah. So, and you didn't know you got, it was a last-minute deal for you. Let's talk about, and my other guest just walked back in the office here, there was an amount of money that, now originally this trip was scheduled to be this summer, and you guys discovered that if you upped it and went in May and said you could save yourself like $1,500, $1,600 together between the two of you, and the school, and miss almost 2 full weeks of school.
Right, but who doesn't want to do that?
Exactly, and you guys as well. Kenna did something that was rather interesting one day, and she made a thermometer, and I shared this on Terry Latham's Pathfinder call when I was the guest speaker, and he'd asked me to talk about what some of the things were that Stacy and I had done overseas, and I said, well, you know, Terry, let me just share something happened yesterday with our own daughter, and McKenna had made a thermometer on a piece of paper, and we still have it in her book with all the stories and letters and some of the souvenirs and photos. That thermometer was a goal because she knew that she'd have some extra money that was raised that was earmarked for this trip. And, so it obviously needed to be designated something to be connected to the trip. And so our friends that live in Indonesia sent us a list of all the things that she could do to, you know, invest the money into. And Ken, you can use that phone if you want to jump on that one. No, it won't have interference. So go ahead and push talk. There you go. So now you're on the phone, so I don't have to hand this one back to you. You had a little bit of extra money. You had a goal of how much?
$1,500, I think.
Okay, $1,500, you think. And did you reach your goal?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, emphatically. As a matter of fact, there's still some checks that have come in the last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you have thank you notes to write, too, so by the way. So what did you end up doing with that $1,500?
I bought a land with it by the orphanage.
Bought some property, so you're now a property owner. Yeah? You invested into real estate, in other words. Now, what are they doing with that land?
They're going to put crops on it, and then they're going to, it will grow, and they can give some to the kids, and then to get money.
So some of the kids are actually starting to work on the land to sell at the local vegetable and fruit market.
Yeah.
And they were renting that land, I believe, before, like $1,600 a year. And so now they own it. And there are several photos of you standing in front of your property, and then there's another one of you handing the check to the orphanage director. What did that make you feel like?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You're smiling from ear to ear. So was that worthwhile? I mean, you could have taken that money, $1,500. You could buy a lot of toys and stuff, Barbies and American Girl stuff for your own room, right? Yeah. But you didn't do that. How come?
I like giving it to them.
You like giving it to them?
Yeah.
Okay. Jess, what did that do to you? I mean, seeing an 8-year-old girl, was that a little bit challenging?
It floored me. I, you know, just with being a student and working part-time and scrounging for money, it really just floored me that this little girl could see how not only $1,500 could really, what it could do for this orphanage, but that to buy the land, and then that it's something that will keep giving. That, you know, it's not just like a one-time thing where you go and, okay, well, we'll buy you mattresses or we'll buy you toys or books for school, which is all great stuff to do, but this land that they can make a profit off of it as well and feed themselves. I just think that it's amazing that she came up with that.
And it wasn't just McKenna, obviously. There's you know, I think over 100 people that contributed to the trip of Stacy McKenna and you going. And you're right. And the way that Ken explained it to us was that, you know, this will not only affect this group of kids, but the next group and the next group after that. the way home, or the way it was explained in the Canada, that on the journey home, there was going to be a quick stopover for a few days in the Philippines to visit one of McKenna's dearest friends, Josie, who is the daughter of Matt and Chris McNeil, who are what we describe as super missionaries because they do so many different things, and I'm not sure how they cram it all in 24-hour stay. I don't think they sleep much, actually. And one of the aspects is the Mercy Maternity Clinic, which just you went there on the day. I guess you didn't get a chance to see it until the day you guys were leaving, correct?
Right, okay. Right.
What were you expecting, and then what was the reality of what you saw there?
I was expecting something way more third world than what we walked into. But it was actually kind of like walking into, I want to say like a bed and breakfast, but that sounds silly. a bed and breakfast where people give birth. Yeah, really. I mean, it was extremely, extremely functional and well run, and you know, the students there were professional, and the ladies. It was just all. It's hard to put into words. It was probably an experience for the women who was going there as well to go in for their checkups, because a lot of them came from what Chris explained as the slums from around the Philippines, because they couldn't afford, you know, anything else. And the fact that they made this kind of help available to them, and the level of the care and how nice the facility was, it was impressive.
Now, just for everybody else's sake, what this maternity clinic is, I think they're going into their 10th year.
Mm-hmm. 11,000 babies.
11,000 babies have been born as a result of these midwifery students. It's the school of midwifery, and basically students from all over Western countries, or I should say developed countries, U.S., Canada, Europe, travel to the Philippines. They pay the money every single month to basically get trained as a midwife. And while they're there for a year and a half, 2 years, they get enough experience and enough catches. There's enough births that they get to be part of to be certified as a midwife. Now, normally, like here in the States, it would take 3, maybe 4 years to be around enough babies born, because not that many people use a home delivery method or a midwife. And you have to have a certain amount. Well, how many kids were born, McKenna, while you guys were there in just a few days? You were there 3 days. You got there on a Wednesday morning. You left Friday night. And you got to hold some brand new babies, right? Yeah.
Six
babies were born. And I guess statistically there's like 200 ladies that come to the clinic every single day to get checked up on, okay? One of the other things that was startling to us is coming back home, I know that Stacey had said that the hospital where you were born, Mount Hood Medical, the big banner outside that in their 12, 15 years, however long that hospital's been there, they're really excited that they've had, you know, to reach the 10,000 mark of babies. And we kept thinking to ourselves, wow, this little clinic in Davao, Philippines, that's been in existence not even 10 years, has had 11,000 babies. And they're not a team of professional Western medical type people. I wouldn't say they're amateurs, because they're definitely not.
Right.
However, what they are is they're people who are going there and wanting to give of themselves just to simply provide a need. And if you've got 200 ladies coming into a clinic per day just to get checked up and go through the tests and that kind of thing, that's a huge amount. Hey, Ken, answer this question for me. What was it like to hold a brand new baby that was, what, 6 pounds, or pretty small, pretty tiny by American standards? What was that like for you? Big yawn again, I know. The early morning calls that Daddy does that just kill you, don't they? So what was that like? Stretch. Pull the answer out of the brain.
Like, I don't know. It was really
shaking head no. But you got to be there. You want to go back there. You want us to move to the Philippines, don't you?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen right this second, anyway. Let me ask you one more question, Kenna, before you go out the door.